Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. So a lot of you have already been itching for ski season and you want to know what is that going to look like in the pandemic? Good question. So for that, we're going to turn things over to Bob Switzgable, who's actually the owner of Ski Sundown here in Connecticut. Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm doing well, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you so much. So I've got to imagine you guys are getting some feedback already. People just wondering what is ski season going to look like during COVID? So your answer to that, my friend?
Absolutely. People are very excited for this season. I think they're looking for the ability to get outside during the pandemic. And so what we're going to do a little bit differently this year is we're going to restrict the amount of people in the lodge to 50%. So we're going to ask cooperation from everybody, everything from, you know, getting your boots on in your car and just going skiing, to if you are in the lodge and having lunch or a meal, to just kind of move along and get outside as soon as you can to just allow everybody to share in the space. We're also going to restrict ticket sales, and everything will be sold online this year. And so at our peak times, you're going to want to go online for the weekends just to make sure that there is availability of tickets.
Okay, so are you? So you guys are cutting capacity. How much are you allowing? I guess, like, in comparison to average years.
In comparison to average years, we're going to be at 50%.
Okay, all right, makes a lot of sense. Now, Bob, I know that our summer is going to be completely different than winter, obviously, because we were still even trying to navigate what COVID looked like. But I've got to be honest, in Connecticut, we really saw a lot of issues when it came to tourism. And I know Ski Sundown is very popular for southern Massachusetts. I know that you get people from Rhode Island, you get people coming up from New York. Ski Sundown is also a really big place where schools will bring their school trips. They'll have ski teams come up this way. Are you nervous at all with tourism season and COVID that your numbers are not going to be where you need them to be?
That is not my concern. I mean, I think about it, but our big concern this year is managing the crowd so that we don't have any kind of outbreaks. That's what we're really concerned with. We can take a hit for a year. It's not going to bother us. I do think that if we, because we're restricting some of the weekend sales, that and I'm hopeful that some of that business will spill over to the weekdays if people have the availability during the weekdays when we're slower. So I think that's a good opportunity for us. But I'm not worried about a lack of people coming. I just want to make sure that everybody's safe.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense. Talking this morning to Bob Switzgable, who's the owner of Ski Sundown. And Bob, I know obviously safety's a big priority for you guys there. I just know from living in Vermont for 10 years on and off before coming back home to Connecticut, that our mountains were starting to struggle in the last couple of years because we had warmer winters. We were spending a lot of money making snow. So I'm not sure about Ski Sundown. I'm not sure what you guys have noticed as far as revenue concerns over the last couple of years. But my question, I guess, is do you feel that COVID is going to make an even bigger issue for you guys, or do you feel that you're going to still at least break even with your finances?
I think we're going to be just fine this year. You know, we've seen a lot of interest in children's programs, a lot of interest in our, you know, preseason sales with children's programs and with season passes. So if that's any indication, and it usually is an indication, there's a lot of interest and people really do want to get out for this winter.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would think that this is probably one of the better things to do during the pandemic. You're naturally socially distanced. You're outdoors, which is great, fresh air. And I would think that this is what people, if you had never tried skiing before, I would say this is the year to do it, I would think.
It really is. And we're going to take extra precautions, you know, on our chairlifts. We have triple chairlifts. We're only going to be loading two people if instead of three. If somebody wants to ride alone, we're going to allow that. If people come in the same car and there's three of them, then certainly they can ride together. But again, you're outside. Mm-hmm. You're in the outside air. And it's a natural thing for a lot of skiers to just wear face coverings all the time anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that's going to be a big deal.
Okay. Yeah. And my, of course, question that I'm sure everybody is thinking is, when are you opening? When do you think the mountain will be open?
Well, that's really up to Mother Nature. It always is. But typically, we open first or second week in December. We've opened as early as Thanksgiving some years, but the average is around the second week in December. And again, it's all up to Mother Nature. It has mm-hmm. nothing to do with us.
Yeah, that's very true. Bob Switzgable, who's the owner of Ski Sundown. What is your website? If people want to pre-register, they want to get their tickets online when the time comes or learn anything else about the protocols you guys have in place, where can they go?
SkiSundown.com. And we have all the protocols up. We've been working with the National Ski Area Association and also the Connecticut Ski Area Association so that we all have uniform precautions this year, and everything is on our website.
All right, Bob, we appreciate it, and we will see you on the slopes in just a couple of months. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Melissa. I appreciate it.
Dan Onofrio is here, who's with the Bridgeport Regional Business Council. And Dan, so glad to have you back on the show. How are you?
I'm doing great this morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I was telling our listeners that you're going to be on every week now, and I'm so excited because we all want to know about our small businesses, about our surrounding area, and what everything is looking like. So we appreciate that you're going to be a weekly guest for us. Something that you brought up to me yesterday on the show was in regards to another grant. This is separate from the grant we were talking about last week, the $1 million grant. This one you're saying is a grant from the state, and you're going getting more details on the timing and expectations. What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the state of Connecticut last week announced a small grant program. They're allocating $50 million to both distressed communities as well as the surrounding communities. I think they're allocating $25 million directly towards small businesses within distressed communities, and the other $25 million will be available for other small businesses.
Wow.
You know, I think what we need to realize is, you know, this isn't, you know, a silver bullet for small businesses, but the state recognizes that they're in need. We are expecting another stimulus package of some sort, hopefully soon from the federal government. So this was another way to just kind of bridge along some businesses. You know, and $5,000 on the surface doesn't seem like a lot, but you know, it could cover a month or two of rent for some of the smaller businesses, or payroll, or some other expenses that they may have. So this is a wonderful program for businesses to take advantage of.
Yeah, very true. So I need to just understand that really quickly. So I heard 50, 25, and 5. So we're getting a $50 million grant, like the state of Connecticut?
Yep. The
okay.
state of Connecticut is allocating $50
million. Okay.
And they're going to make $5,000. It's going to be a one flat grant of $5,000 made available to small businesses.
Okay. So each
get into.
So each business would get $5,000 if they apply or they can qualify for that money.
Exactly. And I can give you kind of a snapshot of the eligibility in a moment.
Yeah. So, okay. So that's my understanding is, okay, so they, out of that $50 million, they can get $5,000, which, like you said, could be very helpful to just make ends meet for another month, maybe 2 months. Maybe it means if you're an outdoor restaurant, for example, maybe it means that you can use that money to get those outdoor heaters or get another tent to do outdoor dining. So that could, you know, take things a long way. It may not sound like a lot, but you're right. That could be a big deal. Now, my question, Dan, before we talk about eligibility. Is this, are we going to see, because it's a state grant versus what we saw with the federal grant, will we see this money quicker than what we see with the $1 million that's been kind of in process, is what I've been told to call it, for the last 8 months?
Absolutely. So basically, they're going to make the grant, the application available the week of November 9th. That's the expectation. And they're planning on distributing these funds before the end of the calendar year. So
okay.
Businesses will see this before the end of 2020.
Okay, so they could see it by the end of December. That's okay. That's very exciting. Talking to Dan Onofrio, who's with the Bridgeport Regional Business Council, and talking about a state grant of $50 million. And when you kind of narrow that down, it ends up being about $5,000 for companies, their businesses that qualify for this grant money. So how do you qualify, Dan? What are some of the eligibility markers that people need to look for?
Sure. So You need to have 20 or less full-time employees. So for those of us that employ a lot of part-timers, that factors into it. So you have to, it's a full-time equivalent. So 20 or less. And sole proprietors are included in that. So they qualify for this program. Or your annualized revenue, your annualized payroll needs to be less than $1.5 million. So that I say or, I stress or, because it's not and or, you know, it's either one. It's either 20 full-time equivalents or less, or $1.5 million of annualized payroll or less.
So what if you're an office of five people that are full-time workers, but you make more than the $1.5 million?
You qualify.
You do qualify. Okay.
Yes. So it's or. That's
okay.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. You also need to show a 20% loss in revenue. Now, the key thing here is this is year over year over the first three quarters of the year. So from January 1st of 2020 through September 30th of 2020, compare that over to the same period of 2019. You have to show 20% or more loss in revenue for that same time period. So that's another important note to make.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So you got to get those documents together. All right. And
that's right.
Anything else?
No, I think on the broad spectrum there, that's the highlights.
Okay.
I do also want to note that there are going to be several information sessions to help organizations and companies, nonprofits that qualify for this, to help them navigate through this thing over the next couple of weeks. Because we do expect once the applications become available, it's going to fill up quickly. When the state launched a similar program at the beginning of the COVID crisis, I think it was up for maybe 2 days. Because in the end, there's 50,000 businesses roughly that the state is saying that qualifies for this. And then, if they're giving out 5,000, it's really only, they're only going to be helping about 10,000 businesses.
Wow.
So be prepared. And that's why I thought it was important to stress that on this morning's call, is get your documents together, start preparing what you need, because the application process is probably going to close out pretty quickly.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Dan, before I let you go, quick question. Do you know where we're getting this $50 million? Like, is this coming out of the rainy day fund or something?
I think I want to say, and I apologize for not knowing the answer to this question, but I want to say it's part of the CARES Act dollars that were allocated to the states. Yes.
Okay.
So I think in the end, it is federal dollars that the state's allocating towards this particular program.
Okay.
Well, be wrong, so don't quote me on that.
No,
we'll have more details on that. Yeah.
No problem. I was going to say the governor's popping on Friday, so I could double check it with him. But I was just curious. I thought, all right, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of good, it's a lot of money. So good chunk of change there. I just wanted to know. All right. Well, Dan Onofrio, I so appreciate this update this morning. And again, so excited that we're going to have you on once a week. I think our listeners will really benefit from that. So thank you so much. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks, Melissa. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Connecting this morning with Commissioner Sayla Mascara Bruno, who is with the Department of Housing here in Connecticut. Hi, how are you, Sayla? Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So I wanted to start by just seeing, first of all, where are we at with the pandemic? What is the deal for renters right now if they're trying to make ends meet, but the pandemic has kind of either been an issue for their jobs or their living situations?
So the Department of Housing is managing about $40 million that the governor approved to help the renters. We are working diligently to process applications and sending payments to the landlords. The program helps with up to $4,000 a tenant. And once it is approved, then it goes to the funds goes directly to the landlord. So we're trying to help both the tenants and the landlords.
Okay, that was going to be my question, because when you hear about this financial assistance program and trying to help relief for the renters, immediately I think, well, yes, there's 50% of the people being covered, but then the other 50% are the landlords. And I wanted to know how they were being compensated, because I know a lot of times landlords, they do rely on the income they're getting from their renters to make ends meet.
Yes, and absolutely, and that's the whole idea, is to make sure that when we approve a renter that needs help and needs assistance, then the resources goes directly to the landlord.
Okay.
So we help both of them.
Okay. So do you have to put in an application or something like that? So let's just say you're a renter. You're saying, hey, you know what? I just can't make rent happen. I just lost my job because of COVID. Do they put an application in or something? How does that all work?
Yes, we have. In the phase one, we took applications through a call center. We sent applications to the tenants. And the phase two, we just opened it up yesterday, and is an online application. We still have a call center for those individuals that do not have access to internet. They can call the call center directly, and then they enter the information for them in the online application.
Okay. Do you have that number handy by any chance if people want to call?
Michael, do you have the number handy?
She's talking to Michael Santoro, who's the Director of Policy Research and Housing Support, who's standing by.
Thank you. Yes, Commissioner, for your listeners, it's 1-860-785-3111.
Okay.
Or you can go directly to the website, either the Departmental website or the CHFA website. If you go to www.chfa.org/CRHAP for Temporary Rental Housing Assistance Program, you can fill out the online web submission.
Okay. Yeah, it seems simple enough. My last question is, you know, when you talk about $40 million that's being used to be able to compensate renters or being able to help renters and compensate landlords, I should say, how long do you think we'll have before we run out of that money and we're going to be in a crunch again? Because the pandemic, it seems like, is not going to be going away, unfortunately, at least for another few months.
Yeah. So the resources that we have right now comes from the CARES Act. The CARES Act money has to be spent by December 30th. So for this tranche of money, we have to end December 30th. However, we are looking for other resources because we know that there will be more families that will need some assistance to continue the program after December 30th.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Well, Commissioner Mascara, Bruno, I appreciate you coming on this morning. Also, Michael Santoro, I appreciate both of you coming on. Would love to have you back on again, especially as we get closer to the end of December and we may see some more changes. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
It sounds like later this afternoon, Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisowitz will actually be in Bridgeport doing some in-person Narcan training. And she's here this morning to give us a little bit of a preview and why she'll be coming to our area. So, Lieutenant Governor, so glad to have you back on the show. How are you?
I am well, thank you, and thanks for having me. And we are visiting Bridgeport to do naloxone training because we think it's really important, given the spike, not just in COVID-19, but the related spike in opioid overdoses. We want to make sure that people in Connecticut know how to respond if a loved one, a friend is having an overdose.
Mm-hmm. Now, what does this in-person training look like? Is this for the general public? Is this for officials in the Bridgeport or surrounding area? Who's meant to be learning from this, I guess?
So really everyone. It will be limited to participants, but at the same time, we are trying to raise awareness of the opioid crisis in Connecticut. This year, we've seen an increase in opioid-related deaths compared to the same time frame last year. So we know it's a problem, and we want people to understand what resources are out there to keep people alive. Narcan, or naloxone, is extremely vital to keeping people alive. And the state of Connecticut has done two things. One, we've had a Live Loud public awareness campaign so that the people of Connecticut know where they can get help if they have an addiction problem or have a loved one who has one. They know where to go. That's done through our Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. And also, there's a NORA app that you can put on your phone to let you know wherever you are in the state, where is the closest place to purchase Narcan.
Oh, that's awesome.
If you or someone who knows needs it. Mm. But it's also important for people to know how to administer it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Talking to the Lieutenant Governor this morning in regards to a training that's actually going on in Bridgeport this afternoon. She's going to be there talking about Narcan, which, of course, is like the reversal drug. If you're having an overdose, many times we have seen our local and state officials be able to save people's lives because of naloxone. So we're glad that you're going to be doing this training. My question, Lieutenant Governor, if you don't mind me sort of diverting a little bit. You know, you mentioned the pandemic certainly only, I would say, only made the opioid crisis worse. It certainly didn't make it better.
Yep.
How is the state doing now that we're 8 months into this? Where are we at with having services open back up for people who struggle with addiction and having those resources available to them so we don't get to a point where we have overdoses happening?
So our providers of those services, and as a matter of fact, I visited a provider in Norwich, and those are open. There are some services that are virtual, so any kind of counseling can happen virtually, or some of it is in person because counselors and navigators for those who are struggling with addiction, understand that sometimes for some people, in-person counseling is more effective. Mm. So both kinds are happening. And because of legislation that was passed in the special session, there is more insurance coverage for the telemedicine and telecounseling that's happening as well. So people should understand that that's important, but we need to have both because sometimes people don't have access to a computer, don't have access to the internet. So the in-person counseling and help is really important. And so that's why both are available right now.
Lieutenant Governor Bicewitz, a question I also had in regards to the opioid crisis. So there were a lot of factors that I would say really contributed to it, not just here in Connecticut, but across the country. And I just know from living in Vermont on and off 10 years before coming back home to Connecticut that we had one of the drug capitals in the Northeast, which was Rutland, Vermont. And I remember specifically when I was a reporter there that they said, you know, there are people who are trafficking drugs into certain states and they're coming from big hubs like either Rutland, it's parts of Massachusetts, but also New York. Do you know how Connecticut is doing as far as keeping an eye out for drugs being trafficked into Connecticut and having a part of the opioid crisis getting in the hands of the wrong people?
Yes. So we are making sure we're doing our best to fight drug trafficking, both through federal resources and the United States Attorney's Office and the FBI are looking out for drugs coming in from China. A lot of them are coming in through the mail and then being distributed or coming from other places as well. And unfortunately, we've seen Connecticut is getting more fentanyl, and fentanyl is extremely deadly. So this is why the Narcan training is really important. And sadly, there's a greater demand because people are very stressed. Either, you know, people have lost jobs, they're dealing with working at home, having kids, doing at-home learning. There's a lot of stress. We've also seen an uptick in domestic and family violence as a result of the pandemic, too. So this is something that the Council on Women and Girls is trying to assist the Connecticut Coalition for Domestic Violence with that uptick and helping women who are suffering from abuse get resources as well.
Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewitz, thank you so much for popping on the air this morning. Looking forward to seeing you this afternoon in Bridgeport, and we'll talk again really soon.
Thanks for having me, and don't forget, put your absentee ballot in the box today or over the weekend.